You're listening to the Mythgreen Podcast with your hosts, Oren Ashkenazi, Wes Matlock, and Chris Winkle. There was a castle by a waterfall with a pink and purple wall and a princess living there. She had no parents and was all alone. She got by on her own and she liked it pretty well. Cause she never wore socks, she had a pet snake, she bought a red guitar and she ate a whole cake. And there wasn't anybody there. Tell her what to do, so she did what she wanted to. Everybody knew the story of the princess who saved herself.
This episode was produced thanks to our patron, Kathy Ferguson, professor of political theory in Star Trek.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Mythgreen Podcast. I'm your host, Wes, and with me is...
Chris.
And...
Oren.
And so today we're going to try and entertain you by talking about our changing views of heroes and heroic characters over the course of our own lives, rather than speak in general. But I'm sure we'll maybe come to some far-ranging, amazing conclusions on the nature of what it is to be a hero in today's world. At least that's what I set out to do today. Are you with me?
I have to talk about my embarrassing, like, childhood views of characters. I'd rather not.
We'll try to maybe start or apply like a process to this by maybe starting with our childhoods, and then we'll explore our teenage years, and then maybe where we are now. But when I was thinking about a heroes from my childhood, the one that like immediately came to mind that I was attracted to was Wolverine. Like, that's my favorite X-Man, and you know, the action figure. And I was trying to think, what was it about Wolverine that like a 6-year-old kid would find heroic? And I guess what I probably enjoyed about Wolverine is what like a lot of classical literature has shown to be like a heroic template is like, hey, like, how do you accomplish things with guile? No, I'm just gonna go walk in there and solve the problem with like my brute force, you know? Like, look at like all the Greek heroes basically do that. I mean, like, Achilles is like credited with being like, or no, sorry, Odysseus is credited with like being a smart guy, but really also like the gods kind of like give him rippling muscles and let him just kind of force his way through stuff anyway. And then there's of course like the Beowulf legend, like those very like archetypal, just like, you know, pure strength stat, maybe a bunch of constitution, like, you know, heroes. And Wolverine kind of represented that for me. It's like, what's his power? He punches things with sharp knives and he can heal fast. So he's like far less complicated than the other mutants, because sometimes I felt like other mutants were just like a little too outlandish for me and I couldn't like wrap my little head around it. So I liked having this stable, I guess, classic hero that clearly was like an alcoholic with like a smoking problem. But but like that was my earliest conception of like a childhood hero, was just somebody that dealt with things head on and see what happened. That was it. No nuance.
Well, I mean, and plus like his power is that he has knives for hands. Mm-hmm. So like that's also kind of appealing to a child.
Well, I think it's also like appealing too to like, you know, a kid like has like very little sense of maybe like death and mortality, and Wolverine like will always heal, you know. Mm-hmm. Like he's kind of eternal in that respect. That's one. How about you two?
So when I was a kid, I didn't have a whole bunch of like stories that I was super like fangirling over. What I did is I had insomnia and
as a kid,
it's actually gotten better, which is surprising. It's supposed to get worse over the course of your life. As a result, I would have long periods of time where I would lay in bed doing absolutely nothing because I was supposed to be sleeping. And so I ended up making up a lot of characters and making up stories is how I passed the time while I was laying in bed in the dark. And
nice.
And definitely for me, like the earliest memories I have of, you know, the kinds of things that I made up, is I liked hero characters that were both beautiful and deadly. You know?
Yeah.
Like I would make up, here's, you know, what she looks like, and she always had red hair and was really attractive. And like I would make up like what her dress, her gown looked like. And then she would always like be really badass with a sword and like bow and arrow, you know,
yeah,
like a crossbow or something, and she would be like a, you know, she would take disguises and be kind of like assassin-y and like go, you know,
kind of. The crossbow is kind of an unusual choice for a fantasy hero. It's like the, I think the bow is popular because like people can kind of imagine you can fire a bow as quickly as you want to, but like a crossbow has like a reload time. So I don't think it's that popular for heroes.
I think I imagined that the crossbow was kind of like the assassin's weapon.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's kind of, and that was kind of like prior to when I was like reading children's novels,
mm-hmm.
right? Because then once I started reading children's novels, I was introduced to heroes in a little bit more depth. And, you know, and in that period I was, besides that, I was mostly obsessed with flying talking cats.
Yeah, well, isn't everybody
the true heroes of our world?
Does that phase ever stop?
And they could that my flying talking cat race that could speak all languages too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, just obviously. Yeah.
If a cat can talk, it definitely knows all languages.
Like a cat has to be able to diss you in whatever language you speak, right? That's just how it is.
All right, Oren.
Okay, so I was kind of a pretentious kid and like My you know, you can never imagine me being arrogant, right? So like I just like really wanted adults to like take me seriously and treat me like an adult.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't, of course, because I was a kid. And so my favorite characters were always kid characters, and the more they showed up adults, the better.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why I loved Wesley Crusher.
Mm-hmm.
And like you know, which is the thing that I hate myself for, but I was and like, you know, I was also, you know, this was before I had even begun the idea that like maybe I could be represented by someone who didn't look like me. So it was like, you know, when I was reading Golden Compass for the first time, it was like, okay, yeah, that first Golden Compass was pretty good, but now The Subtle Knife has a boy in it, and I was like, oh yeah, I could be that boy, and he's also super badass and like beats adults around, and it's like, now I can't stand Will. It's just like, ugh.
Yeah, well, I mean, I do want to say that as a kid, like, I don't feel like you need to feel bad about being mad at adults for, you know, because yes, you're a kid. At the same time, sometimes adults, you know, don't take you quite as seriously as they, kids, quite as seriously as they should. Like, I had a problem as a little girl where I would get angry and then people would think that I was adorable, you know, and then I would like yell to my, you know, like, I'm not cute. And they just thought it was funny. But like, you know, if you're actually angry, that's not what you want to hear. Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just want to say some amount of that is reasonable coming from a kid.
But, you know, like, I also loved, like, Garion from the Belgorad.
Oh, yeah.
And like, because at that, this was like my first introduction to the idea of the farm boy chosen one. And I was like, but he's just like a farm boy and he was the chosen one. That means the chosen one could be anybody.
Yeah. Right?
It could even be me. So, you know, I was totally taken in with that idea. Mm-hmm. And like Taran of Caer Dalben, which is not spelled the way that I thought it was spelled, apparently. But I was super into him from the, what is that, the period?
The Chronicles of Prydon.
Prydon, yeah, has a weird name.
Yeah,
I always thought of it as the Dalben books, but yes, I was super into that character. And
when
like,
he had a whole just like just retinue of like great like heroic companions from Islandwe to Gurgi. Gurgi's even a great hero.
You know, those are. I mean, they are, despite like having only one female character who was kind of stereotyped. Those were overall pretty like good books. I mean, if we're talking about the transition of thinking of heroes just like beating people up. Mm-hmm. To thinking of them as something else. I think though the Chronicles of Prydain like really put an emphasis on trying to make Taran, you know, teach him like wisdom and restraint and good values, you know, like he's not a beat 'em up villain so much. No. Like he gets better at sword fighting, but that's not the type of villain that he is. And I feel like they at the same time he's very blank and so mm-hmm. he's like super relatable.
Mm-hmm.
So it's yeah. really easy to like identify with him, and you know,
but you know, just like any like no amount of candy was too much, you know, it was like, yeah, I want super candied characters who are the best at everything and just like do a great mm-hmm. job. That was what I wanted, and that was my view of what made a good hero, you know, and I definitely still think that now.
You haven't changed a bit.
Nope.
I guess maybe now is as good a time. I need to maybe talk about transitioning. We're getting a little bit older and we're looking at our heroes. I think I started getting into, I mean, I think Bilbo is actually a decent like introduction to kind of like, you know, the small but mighty hero type character that like, it's more about like the heroic quality is like in the strength of character, right? Rather mm-hmm. than like your ability to punch with knives really hard and heal, right? It's more about like, you know, having like mental fortitude and being able to like do stuff despite like, you know, being a hobbit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was, and to this day, I still kind of have always preferred like halflings and dwarves. I just am like, yeah, they're not as tall, but they have other things going on for them.
Yeah. Certainly, I think getting into when I started reading children's novels and all of it, besides like Tarian, there's the heroes for girls, female characters. I feel like a lot of them have a hint of like subversiveness to mm-hmm. them because they are breaking the mold. And particularly, there's a one series that is pretty subversive. It's like called the Enchanted Forest series. Starts with I think it's dealing with dragons, and that one is about a princess who decides that she's like tired of living in the normal castle and she wants to go and be a dragon's princess. Whereas all the other princesses like are like kidnapped by dragons, she decides she's gonna just go out and find a dragon.
Nice.
To basically be her kidnapper. And you know, and goes and just walks up, finds a group of dragons and just walks up to them and is like, hey, I would like to be a dragon's princess. I can make Cherry's Jubilee and like aww. Actually do like housework and stuff. Whereas the other princesses were like, no, you can't, you know, break our nails or whatever. And so that kind of like that subversiveness of starting to kind of like rebel against this typical fairy tale and women's roles in it, I think was kind of a pretty characteristic for like my adolescence. You know, and unfortunately I did read a lot of books that starred male characters because mm-hmm. I did really like the farm boy to, you know, chosen one trope. I read the Belgarad, you know, read the Chronicles of Prydane. But you know, having those female characters who are not like, no, we're not going to be the damsel in distress, you know, I would consider a fairly important kind of turning point to have exposure to them.
Yeah
For me, like adolescence was kind of weird because I became a contradiction, because like I was starting to think about storytelling at this point, mm-hmm. like not just consume stories, I was starting to analyze them. And definitely if you asked me, I would have told you that like the grimmer, darker, the better. Like, I was into super dark. Everything had to be dark because it was gritty and real. Very real,
it has
guys.
To be real. It's gritty.
has, obviously. And yet, my favorite characters are almost all, like, you know, prim, proper, like, good dudes. Like, Luke Skywalker. I got a lot of, you know, ribbing from my friends group because they all liked Han Solo, and Luke was my favorite. And, you know, like Captain Picard, because he was just like a great guy. And like they were my favorites, and like they still are in Star Wars. I mean Leia is obviously my favorite character now, but of the dudes in Star Wars, Luke is probably my favorite. And so it was weird. It was a very strange time, as you know, I'm sure no one who's ever been through like adolescence will identify with. Yeah, like I definitely didn't really know what I wanted at that point. I was all about like I basically started my first like attempts at writing when I was in, you know, 15 to 17, and I was super into like making the characters as like flawed as possible, to the point that like I ended up writing a series of Star Trek scripts that I worked on like through college, and I am embarrassed by how closely they resemble Star Trek Discovery. They were so grimdark. And I was like, and now I'm looking at Discovery and I'm like, oh, thank God nobody ever did anything with those scripts. Oh God, I'm glad I never recorded that. Mm-hmm.
What about you, Wes? Early,
I mean,
adolescence,
I guess,
early
yeah,
teenage years.
I think, I mean, I definitely remember marking a transition like into, I like I mean, if I'm gonna like play a character in like a video game or a role playing game, and if wizards are allowed, I'm probably going to be a wizard. And
yeah, always.
I mean, I think I was thinking about like where does that like kind of come from, and I remember two heroes that really like influenced me, and I ended up kind of reading them around the same time, which is funny because like they're very different. And just to preface this, I was a little older when I finally read like the first Harry Potter book, but Hermione became, to exemplify this kind of hero, as well as I read Dracula, and Van Helsing fills the exact same kind of role, right? Where it's like, these are two people that understand that knowing as much as possible will win the day, right? And like, that is like the wit, wisdom, and intelligence are heroic qualities, right? Like, you understand where you are, what you're dealing with, and how to like accomplish your goals. To me, that became like a really like powerful like heroic quality, which I guess kind of made sense because like I guess, you know, you're in school, and how do you do well at school? Oh, well, you like learn more, and then you pass tests, and you know, it was it was really accessible. And so I started getting attracted to like heroes that exemplified those kind of qualities. Like, they can be flawed in other ways, but as long as their I guess their grit was in like learning, then that was something that I found really heroic.
Well, like, continuing my weird like being all over the place when I was a teenager, my favorite character when I first read Harry Potter was Ron,
because he's relatable,
because he was like, I mean, because he was like not very smart and like not brave and was just doing his best, and like I certainly didn't like, you know, when I was in high school, my grades were fine. Right, like I didn't have a particular problem with my grades, but I certainly didn't view myself as being very smart. So, but like, you know, Ron is just there, and like he's surrounded by Hermione, whose superpower is to know everything, and like Harry, who can just do whatever he wants when the plot demands it. and Ron is there, and also Ron was there is kind of the constant theme of Ron's character, and like I definitely identified with that. And like nowadays, I feel like Ron is really insufferable. Like a huge jerk when I reread these books, but at the time I was like, yeah, Ron, he's super relatable because he's just like a normal person with normal abilities and not like a super chosen one like Harry or Hermione are. So like that was weird, but that was definitely how I felt about Harry Potter when I first read it.
Well, I mean, I liked Harry Potter. I liked Harry Potter the best. Granted, this, you know, getting into my later teens, this marks like my transition into a focus on like pretty angsty guys. Long time. Really liked writing the pretty angsty, troubled, troubled guys. And so Harry Potter, you know, like with his like green eyes and stuff, and you know, he's kind of a blank character, but you know, he also, again, I still like the chosen. I definitely, you know, as an adult, Hermione, it impresses me now more, you know, than. You know, I think she was written as just like the quirky sidekick, and I think when I first was younger, I read it, that's how she came off to me, is more like the quirky sidekick. Whereas when it's you're older, it's like, why does Hermione put up with Harry and Ron?
Yeah, like, why doesn't she just solve the problem? It feels like she's already got it figured out. It's just like,
but yeah, no, and I started, certainly as I got into my late teens, I started to write some real dark stuff too. You know, with darker stories, with darker themes, and more troubled characters.
I can definitely point to a very specific of like occurrence that like got me to start like being interested in more diverse characters. And that was like when I was role playing, because I started role playing like in early high school. And the characters that I played were pretty much always like, again, even though I was super into grim dark stuff in theory, I always played like super noble and like practical hero characters. But a friend of mine that I played with, like his characters, he always played a female character, and like not in like a weird sexy way, that was just what he did. And in the group, that was like super strange, like the idea of like playing as a character that was like not the same gender as you was like bizarre, and like there were lots of comics making fun of that idea at the time. And so the fact that he just did it and didn't make a thing of it, he was like, yeah, my character, her name is Samantha, and then like he would play her like a normal character, that like really made an impact on me. as, you know, as juvenile as that sounds, it did. And, like, that was, like, from that point, I started, like, being interested in characters who weren't boys.
That's really interesting.
Both, yeah. like, yeah. both in role-playing and in storytelling. Like, I just, like, I think, like, I can't say for sure what would have happened if I hadn't gamed with that guy, but definitely, like, he definitely accelerated my interest in more diverse characters.
Mm-hmm. Oh, can everybody remember their first role-playing character?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Oh, do you want to hear about him? Okay, he was awful. He was a, this was a Star Wars game that had been in progress for quite some time, and, like, this was during one of the, like, twice a year we would fly to Indiana, where my grandparents lived, and there was nothing for me to do there. Like, I had no friends, and I was super bored and, like, climbing the walls, and my parents, like, tried to find stuff for me to do, and the best they could find was this local gaming store that had, like, reoccurring events, and, like, my mom talked to the owner and was like, can you please let my son play? I know he's younger than the other people who play in your games, who are mostly adults. And they did. And so they were playing a Star Wars game, and they were like, okay, cool, you get to be a young Jedi and, like, have cool force powers. And I was like, yes. And then I went around, like, telling everyone how cool I was and how they didn't know what they were doing, and they had to let me do it. And because they had, like, given me force powers, I actually had the skills to kind of back that up. And I'm sure I was really insufferable, and they, like, deserve, like, a medal for letting me play with them for a couple of weeks.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Okay, now you guys gonna have to tell. What are your first RPG characters?
Well, I will say that, okay, so my very first character, I never actually played this character because the campaign never ended up happening, but it was an existing campaign that I was gonna join. And I was young enough that, remember the talking flying cats?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I asked the GM, can I play this, like, race of, like, talking any language cats? And he was like, well, maybe you could have, like, the cat that speaks any language, but maybe not the flying part. Like, trying to tone down my request a little bit. But then, probably a year or two later, my first character was a halfling rogue named Yussee Minot. Yeah. And she was
That's
a fun,
amazing.
She, you know, I have to say, mischievous female characters have always been just, I don't know, resonated with me for some reason. And, she sort of fit that really well. And as I have stated before, she was the character that was killed by a random bear encounter. Aww. Like a random encounter with just a bear in the woods, and she died.
Those were dark times back when, like, we played with, like, people just dying in random encounters before we realized how bad that was. I'm amazed we survived.
I was a really good sport about it too. I'm so surprised of, like, how good of a sport I was. all right, Wes.
I was thinking, I think it was a MMO that I really first, like, tried to do, like, my first, like, real character experience was back in, like, sixth grade. We were playing Asheron's Call 2, and I just picked a human, and one of the classes you could do was Alchemist, which I kind of found that was kind of like my, like, science hero, because the world is full of, like, just giant things, and there's, like, the other, like, playable races are kind of just, like, much, like, bigger and more, like, physically impressive. So I was like, well, sure, I could have been, like, a wizard, or I could have been a fighter, but no, I think I'll just use science. That's a great way to deal with this, like, harsh environment. And that kind of carried over for a while, because I liked then, in my first D&D experience, I just went as a dwarf rogue. And he specialized in alchemy as, like, a skill. It was just, like, all about, like, because in my mind at that point I was like, oh yeah, all dwarves are just warriors. That's what they do. They all that practice swinging pickaxes and digging tunnels means that they swing axes into orc faces. And so I was like, right. Okay, so maybe this was, like, you know, a city dwarf that, like, you know, didn't really do that. And so instead he learned how locks work and, you know, other types of, like, poisons and potions and things like that. So that was a pretty fun character. He only survived, like, I think one adventure where, oh god, what happened?
Was it a bear? Because that seems to
no,
be
it was this was like a really old adventure, and I think my friend like just ripped it off the internet, and it was a oh god, yeah, it was like a pasta golem, and he just got killed by it. I was like, I didn't even know that there could be pasta golems. This is so infuriating, and I'm dead.
It wasn't even cooked all the way. It was all like tough and chewy.
The special move is the al dente.
Yeah.
Oh, geez.
Well, I think that brings us to more or less the current day.
Yeah.
Because, like, and so my thing now is I am still into diverse characters. I've gotten that, like, I'm pretty tough on mm-hmm. that. But I have a really high like bar for enjoying characters who are flawed.
Yep.
Like, because everyone has a moral event horizon, right, beyond which a character is no longer like redeemable or fun to enjoy to read about. Mm-hmm. And my moral event horizon is significantly like smaller than most people's. Mm-hmm. In that like it is way easier to cross, and so I end up, it's very easy for me to watch and be like, I hate this character. They're too much of a jerk. I don't want them to be redeemed. And you know, like Bellamy from the 100, who has a really cool
but
redemption
Bellamy
arc.
Is
and
so
does...
pretty and angsty.
Yes, he is definitely those things. But like, but you know, he crossed my moral event horizon, and I just like couldn't enjoy him anymore. And that's like, you know, the same thing with like Miller in The Expanse. Mm-hmm. Like, I just don't like Miller. He's just way too much of a dick for, like, no reason. And it, like, he clearly thinks it makes him cool to do that. And it just, like, drives me up the wall. But I'm sure, like, way back in the day, I would have said I liked him.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was, like, grim and real. Very real.
Yeah, like how it's always dark that is real. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
Especially if it's
no,
grim,
never.
Too. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think the character in the series that really like kind of got me into where I am as far as like what is like a hero in my adult life, they are, I mean, I say flawed, but I mean like people are flawed, so they're just mm-hmm. they're just portrayed realistically, and the hero should be trusting and knowing that they cannot do it all alone, despite however skilled they might be. And so I remember I'm going to talk about the Dark Tower series, those seven books that Stephen King did as kind of his weird, like not really horror, but more like, I don't know, spec fic series. And book one is just the gunslinger, and the main character, Roland, is just that. And I didn't find him terribly like compelling or sympathetic as like a hero. But then mm-hmm. at the start of book two, he basically kind of like is asleep from exhaustion. And he gets mobbed by these kind of like weird crab things, and they basically just rip off most of the fingers on his right hand. And I mean, he's, you know, he trained with his guns to where he can like shoot with his left, but he's not like quite as good. So he got hobbled like immediately. And then the whole point of that book was to get it's called The Drawing of the Three. And that's where he gets Eddie, Susanna, and Jake. And they form a group because he like knows that if he's ever going to like accomplish what he wants to do, is he has to have help. And I just think that that is like a really important heroic quality to me, is like you have to have help. Like, it's not realistic for me to see a hero that can just be all candy and do everything on their own. Like, they need to have their egos pushed down by a heavy dose of spinach, and then realize that they need like other people to help them out. Otherwise, nothing good is going to happen.
All right, Chris, you get to share last.
Yeah. Oh, geez. Now I feel like it's building up to something. This is going to be anticlimactic. I think now how things are a little bit different is that I think on one hand, when I look at other stories, I am generally less accepting of more generic heroes, particularly just bland white male, you know, guys who feel like they're just the same character
mm-hmm.
in every story
mm-hmm.
at this
yeah,
point.
Yeah.
But at the same time, more likely to write a protagonist that is a normal person that is just trying to get by,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to being like super badass. And I think that it just, when I look at other stories, I want to see a larger variety. I think maybe I just have a little critic syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
also, you know, it's also tiresome to not see, you know, representation for diverse characters in movie after movie. And so I'm just not willing to give those kinds of characters that just seem bland stand-ins for the most privileged, you know, slice of society, as much benefit of the doubt as I used to.
Yeah, definitely harder on them because it's like, you know, I've seen this a million times before now.
Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, what distinguishes a really good character for me is a character that, again, I'm okay with blank heroes, but having a character that does feel unique and stand out, has unique personality traits, I really like to see when a character just has something that gives them some kind of flavor,
mm-hmm.
of some kind, you know, that they don't behave generically, you know, whether it's like they're unusually shy or, you know, they like to collect odd things, whatever it is. I wish we see more of those. And for like the heroicness, I'm definitely these days more into the idea that that being a hero is not something that, you know, you've got a big villain and you fight the villain, you strike the villain down, and then everybody like claps, so much as a thing that to protect people who are vulnerable, you will end up alienating people, and like that there is a hard decision making that has to go into that process.
I mean, certainly if it doesn't cost you anything, it's like, you know, I mean, I guess that's nice that you did that, but how important is it really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the ability to even like make a really hard decision, right? Like that's tough. Like not everybody can do that, you know, mm-hmm. and deal with the fallout.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, and I still like characters that are pretty flawed, and struggle against those flaws. You know, I really like internal conflicts and having those being mm-hmm. the center of the story.
All right. Well, that is a good place to end this podcast because we are out of time. Those of you at home, if anything we said piqued your interest, leave a comment on the website at mythgreens.com. Otherwise, we will talk to you next week.
If you're stuck on your next draft, we'd love to help. We offer consulting and editing services on mythcreants.com. There was a dragon with a pointy tail. He was bigger than a whale, and his breath was terrible. He scared the princess when he came around. Tried to burn the castle down, but she caught him by his tail. Then she tied him to a tree so the dragon couldn't fly. She told him he was mean, and it made the dragon cry. When he finally apologized, she offered him some tea.
This has been the Mythgreant Podcast, opening closing theme, The Princess Who Saved Herself, by Jonathan Coulton.